Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. Still, I'm with Paddy Davitt and David Freezer. Hopefully not to cover the same old ground that we covered after the Leeds defeat, but at least we've got a different game to talk about, which was, of course, Norwich City's latest defeat at Queen's Park Rangers. 2-1, 10 men, rather an abomination in places. So, Pad, you were there with me at the game, and obviously all that's happened since. First things first, I suppose, and I'm probably going to ask you this on Sports Extra in about an hour. Are you surprised Alec Neil is still in situ as we record this, which is 3 o'clock on Monday?
No, I'm not surprised, mainly because of the public pronouncements of the owners. And I mean, I sat down with the chief exec for a good hour over the international break. Obviously, subsequently, we've played another game since then. But at that point, you take the temperature, and they are the kingmakers. They're the ones who decide what happens. No, they want him to be a success at Norwich City. They think he's a young manager on the up. He's building something here, committed to youth, which is obviously the way they have to go, because we all know about the financial disparities to a lot of their rivals, not so much in the Championship, certainly if you aspire to get into the Premier League. So he fits the model of what they're trying to do. Fine, that's theory. The reality at the minute as we sit here now is 4 straight defeats, making the same errors, changing personnel like revolving doors. Fans increasingly now have had enough. So these are all the external pressures. But to answer your question, no, I'm not surprised he's still in place, because there's no appetite to get rid of the guy from the people who make the decisions.
That is it. That's the appetite from the board, and the appetite from the fans, as Paddy touched on, seems to be quite different, Dave. So how do we reconcile these two at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's quite a good description of it being theory and practice, because for an outsider looking in as well, they'd probably say, well, hang on, Norwich are 6 in the league. What's the problem? They can easily still get promoted. The problem is that you don't want to sit through 46 games of a season playing football that is below the level that they should be producing. I mean, I quite liked the, I'm not sure the exact phrase you used in your 6 things in the paper today, Michael, but it seemed like a fairly random team selection. I mean, why Nelson Oliveira ahead of Jerome, I don't really understand. And just the team selection as a whole didn't really seem to make a lot of sense, other than change for change's sake. So I think there's just too many issues built up now over a fairly long period of time. I mean, this entire year, really, if you think back to that ridiculously bad run of form in the first few months of the year, I think the fans are just sick of it, because you go to football to enjoy it. You know, the Rotherham game is one that I keep going back to. They won 3-1, but they even managed to nearly mess that up against the worst team in the division. They came back into it 2-1, and they needed a late goal to finish off when they should have won 10-0. It's just felt like the shackles are on, and they're dragging £10 weights behind their shoulders, every player, and fans just aren't enjoying it.
I think that the tempo of their play is a major issue, and there, of course, are lots of other issues involved too. And I mean, in terms of the support, I thought the City support on Saturday, Pad at Loftus Road, was excellent, actually. And obviously they voiced their opinions at intervals, but they also sang, and they supported the side. They were probably quite involved once the team started playing with about 20 minutes to go too. And I guess they're in a situation where they are not enjoying what's going on, and they do want that change. So how hard to balance that between, as Dave said, I guess the theory and the practice?
Well, it is, and that's why, you know, the fan view at the minute, the majority fan view, is counter to the majority view on the board. So there's your tension, and that's your contradiction, really, because it was up to the fans. I think you could go and stop 100 fans now in Norwich Town Centre, City Centre, and the vast majority would say time for a change. So they're not going to be happy until that change is enacted. But, you know, ultimately, it comes down to results. It's irrelevant, really, what the board want to do in an ideal world if they continue to they don't even look like they're going to end this run at the minute. So, you know, ultimately, supporters are also customers, and they will maybe start to make some decisions about whether they, as Dave rightly says, if they're not enjoying it, It's not really entertainment, is it? It's more of a chore. So why turn up every week to watch a brand of football they're not enjoying, led by a manager they don't want to be there? So, you know, there's that tension at the minute, and it's, for my mind, I think it's, if he doesn't go before Derby, then basically, if they don't get anything at Derby, I think Brentford would be the tipping point, because that's the next game back at Carrow Road, and 25,000 would, I think, deliver their own verdict, and it'll be much harder to ignore than what they're doing away from home. So that's where we are. You know, ultimately, Felix Neil doesn't manage to get a result or two in these next two games, but even then, we've just had a Q&A, and I think there was a very valid point made that, you know, even if they do start to win one or two games, you fear that there'll be another of these type of runs around the corner, because fundamentally there's players there with instabilities and frailties, and the manager's also shown he's vulnerable as well. So I fear it might be a papering over the cracks job if they were to put an end to the rot.
No one wants to see a manager lose their job, do they? You know, I think generally Alex Neil has been fairly well liked in his time. But the difference with Norwich is there's an urgency to this situation, isn't there? They're not a Bristol City. They're not an Ipswich. They're not just bobbing around in the Championship. They've got parachute money. They've just come down from the Premier League. They've spent four of the last 5 years in the Premier League. They need to be on it this year. Because Newcastle are running away with it. They're not going to catch Newcastle now. You can put your money on that. Villa are looking like they're going to soon be pushing back into the playoffs. Brighton look good, Sheffield Wednesday look good. They are falling well behind the pace, and they've got to get on with it, otherwise they are going to be completely out of it, and financially you're then looking at destabilising the future of the club, because they were on course to set everything up to be like a Southampton. Look at Bournemouth, what they're doing, and it's a much smaller club, and they are now in danger of wasting all the good work that's been done over the majority of the last decade.
What they could do with is conducting a hot show of hands on the pitch as to whether all the fans want to keep the manager or not, and then that will help the board decide to whether to keep the manager or not.
Will the players be involved in that?
I don't know. I think they're already... some would say they're voting. Bizarrely, you then speak to them and they can't speak highly enough of the manager. And I know there's a thing about, you know, you have to defend... This is on the record, obviously, but, you know, they have to defend the guys in post. I suppose that's how the situation is. But why can't you then perform like it?
It's really frustrating, and something that isn't just specific to Norwich City either. I think it's throughout football nowadays that on Friday, we said it in the post-presser video, didn't we, that we put on our websites, that you go up there and Ryan Bennett and Alex Neil are all... full of the joys of spring, like there's nothing wrong. Oh yeah, we are. We've been working on our defensive problems in training this week. It's fine. We're hopefully going to put in a good performance. Hopefully we'll get a win. Well, that's not enough. Just like Ryan Bennett's level of analysis of their defensive problems was, oh yeah, well it's all over the pitch really, from you know, up front to defence. We've all got to defend better. I'm sorry, I want a better answer than that. And it was the same with Alex Neil as well, to be honest, that he didn't really seem to appreciate the seriousness of the situation. The fans are all livid, or a lot of fans are livid at the situation at the moment, and he was acting as if, what are you talking about? There's no problem. We've only lost four in a row.
I've been in a lot of those press conferences, and in a way you give them that rope, because ultimately they can tell us whatever they want. We'll obviously report it, we'll hold them to account on what they say. The problem is when they them start like that in a game afterwards, as if they're like, oh, hang on. QPR are quite up for this. That was a long throw. Oh, no, we can't defend that. And when that gets taken onto the pitch, I think it does becomes much more of an issue to deal with.
I mean, I wasn't at the game. I was covering the Lowestoft game. I've watched as much back of it as I can, but it just reminded me of the England-Iceland game. That's exactly what happened to England, wasn't it? That long throw into the box, panic, oh dear. And that's pressure showing, I suppose, isn't it?
Just getting ready for Roy. That's all that is. Paddy, you mentioned obviously fans are customers. They're also shareholders. And we have the AGM coming up this week where, you know, we do have a situation where the fans and the board and the manager will be in the same room at the same time. They're all going to have to ask some questions. And we've had these situations before where, you know, they come and go. People don't ask the questions they're threatening to beforehand. Sometimes someone will say something they'll be attached to forevermore, like Glenn Roeder and... talking about 10 years of England managers. I mean, what, assuming Alex Neil will still be there and will be fielding questions, this we know what he's like. He'll field those honestly. will he not? But I guess it's about more than that.
I can guarantee, as we sit here now, that he will put on a hugely impressive performance. He will speak from the heart. He's a man of honesty. He's a man of integrity, and he, you know, he won't try and soft soap it and you know, almost try and pull the wool over people's eyes. He we know full well that, and more to the point, those shareholders would come away from that, I would imagine, and think, yes, this is the guy we want in charge of our football club. But as you two rightly alluded to there, Saturday 3 o'clock derby comes, they turn in another one of these almost can't be bothered performances, they get beaten by a resurgent derby, then we're back to square one. So there's a disconnect, you know, between what Alex Neil is saying or would say and mean, and what he is singularly failing to get his team to produce. And it's not just four games, is it? It's basically, as Dave rightly says, it's been going on a long time now, back end of last season, or second part of last season, and all of this, because even when they were winning games, again, as Dave mentioned, you know, it was not exactly cruise control. Everything was an effort. So there's deep fault lines there. It's a malaise for my take on it at the minute. There's so much. There's no point in just focusing on defensively. There's no point just focusing on another player. Why is he playing instead of another? It's just a malaise, and it's indicative of a manager who's loyal to his players for Leeds, between Brighton and Leeds, one enforced change, and then the other side of the international break, he makes six changes. You know, it's going from one extreme to the other. It's almost as if he's lost his way now, and if he's lost his way, then you can see why there's such a muddled approach from those players, and fans can see that, because they're not stupid. You know, they follow the club home and away, and they know things aren't right, and everybody knows things aren't right. So the next question is, and the most pertinent question is, how do you stop that? How do you change it? And top of the pile is you get rid of the manager. So that's what it boils down to, and sadly that's probably what's going to happen. The question is when rather than if.
And I think it's been twigged by a few people that actually this isn't just going to be about the manager, is it? When a new manager comes in, is it going to be straightforward that the squad is good enough? Are we all still at this point happy that Norwich's squad is good enough to get them promoted, if, you know, say you get the right manager in, boom?
Well, often with Alex, it's a case of reading between the lines of what he's saying, isn't it, in press conferences. And I specifically had asked him about new manager bounce and Ian Holloway, and he dismissed it, as he is quite dismissive of things like that pre-match. But then in talking about Ian Holloway, he said, oh, it's funny how when new managers come in, players all of a sudden find this new level, or something similar to that. And it was almost like, oh yeah, you can see what's sort of in the back of your mind there, can't you? That if you were to go, all of a sudden, your Naismiths, your closers and your stuff, and people who, and the players who don't necessarily look particularly happy under his reign, you can just imagine them going in and spanking someone 4-0. I mean, that's not going to be Derby, but it could be Brentford at home. You know, you think about when Brian Gunn came in, they beat Barnsley 4-0 in his first game. That lift you get from a new manager seems to be pretty much across the board. Even if you're a poor team, a Rotherham or someone like that, most managers get a bounce of some kind when they come in. And you can just imagine Alex Neil will be sat there, if he had any hair left, tearing his hair out, thinking, why weren't they doing that for me? Because that, it's a sad part of football, but it's almost become that fans and everyone involved in football are so impatient now that that's the reaction, like Paddy says, that it's the manager who accepts the fall for it, so he has to go. And that almost, that release can just make such a difference. It's kind of a sad state of affairs, but I'd probably put my money on a Bradley Johnson winner at Derby and then a 4-0 win over Brentford if that was to sort of bring a head to all of this.
Yeah, we'll get on to that in a moment. There was an interesting little line from Alec Neil to Chris Gorham, I think he said, of BBC Radio Norfolk after the game, just because that was the one I heard, where he said, these are the players I've got to work with. I thought that was a curious thing to pick up on. And I guess we have this... Do we have to shed this thing that managers have a prolonged shelf life?
On that point, just maybe sort of pick up where you're going with that. I'm now reaching rapidly the conclusion that clubs like Southampton have got it right. Now, they didn't want to lose Koeman, but I guarantee Koeman would have gone at the end of this season. There seems to... It's almost a 1-2 year cycle and then they can refresh, and you flip that round. These players now, they'll have heard everything Alex Neil has got to say. They'll have heard it all before, the good and the bad, the tactical side of it, what they do in training. Okay, he freshened up slightly with Irving coming in on the coaching, but we know he's very hands-on. So the majority of those players who've been with him since January 2015, they've heard it all before. They've heard it all before. And ultimately, they probably switch off and it becomes white noise. And I just think, not specifically related to this situation here now, but football in general, I think there is a very short shelf life where managers can get tunes out of a set of players. And that might be a sad indictment on modern players, I don't know. But I think the days of your Wengers and your Fergusons are long, long gone in terms of longevity. I think it is literally, especially at the top end of the game where the pressure is so great financially to produce winning football almost immediately as soon as you go in. I think that's probably where we are now with modern football. I think it's almost a case of he needs to go off and start somewhere else, and Norwich needs to get some, get a fresh figurehead in, I think.
Yeah, treat it like a shirt, basically. You have a shirt for a season, and then if you like it a lot, you could keep it. But if not...
Yeah, I'd quite go along with what Pad's saying there. I mean, if you look at that, if you go back over, say, a 25-year period, maybe 30-year period since Ferguson went in at Manchester United, out of how many sackings have there been of managers, and compared to how many long-term successful projects have there been? I mean, that you're talking hundreds of managerial appointments there, but how many can you think of who have had successful long reigns? You're talking Ferguson, Wenger, the lad who, was it Graham Turner, who was at Hereford for 10 years, Carl Robinson's just had a fairly unsuccessful long stint at MK Dons. There's not many. You can probably count on two hands successful long-term things. So, you know, Southampton actually got criticism, didn't they, when they first did it. I remember Nicola Cortese being in charge, and he got rid of Nigel Adkins, didn't he,
after a 2-2 draw at Chelsea.
Exactly. And I know Nigel Adkins fairly well from my time covering Scunny, and that hurt him a lot because he'd put a lot of work into getting Southampton up from League One. But proved to be the right decision, didn't it, completely?
I think that shelf life thing is a really interesting point. Alec Neil is currently the fifth longest serving manager in the Championship, I think. And I think there are only seven, I think this is right, only seven Championship managers that have been in their post longer than a year. That's just what it is. Mick McCarthy is the longest serving Championship manager at the moment, and I can guarantee 90% of Ipswich fans do not still want him in the job.
That is some stat. I mean, they're well compensated for it, and I think they all know that that's part of the risk nowadays, don't they? I don't think they necessarily take it to heart and just think, oh well, I'm an awful person, awful manager, I better go and hide under a rock. It's part of the sort of dangers of the job now, isn't it?
And it happens in other sports, and you can see in America they'll change coaches regularly if they're not getting what they want. And I suppose with at least Arsene Wenger, they've managed to achieve something that's probably, when you're at that end of the game, not easy, but you have a relative amount of backing and power that you can achieve it every so often without, you know, falling out too much. But longevity, it's a tough old ask, isn't it? All right, well, I think that covers most of the things in terms of that general debate for now. Let's hear, shall we, after the game from John Ruddy.
Obviously, to start in that manner, I don't think I've ever been involved in something like that. I think Martin's very unlucky to be sent off, and the ball's come a long way from a throw-in. We haven't dealt with it. I've come out and tried to smother the ball. Manua's kicked it as I've made contact with it, and then the next thing I know I'm turning around and obviously is sort of cradling it on the line, and then the big striker for them's come in and kicked him up the backside. We could have had a foul ourselves. I think the referee probably should have consulted his linesman a bit more, but he made the decision. And I thought after that, I thought we responded quite well. We knew we were going to have to give up possession and keep a solid shape. And then we conceded a sloppy goal from a set piece. Don't win the first header, don't stay with the man for the second contact, and then the second goal is equally as sloppy as well. It's a straight ball through the middle of the pitch that we didn't defend, and then obviously my part in the goal, I've made a decision to come out. It's not worked in our favour, but I think the character we showed in the second half answered a lot of questions and doubts that people must have had about us, and it showed a great great sense of character. But to give yourself an uphill start like that, as we seem to be doing recently, you're always going to end up costing yourselves. The results don't lie. We've lost four in a row. Regardless who's on the pitch, that's not good enough. We know that, and we are the only ones that can rectify it. And, you know, it's another fantastic following from the away crowd today. You know, and they're vocal throughout the game in a supportive manner. And, you know, we appreciate their support. But now it's about time, like I said, that we start putting the performances together. That second half was the start of what we need to do. And now we need to make sure we carry it on into the next game. No, we've worked a lot on this week about our shape and keeping solid and defending in units. You know, that's what the manager's working on. But when an incident like that happens in the first 30 seconds, all of that goes out the window. You know, we had a game plan today that we were going to come and press them and really play high up the pitch. And obviously you lose a man in the first minute, then it makes that difficult. And, you know, it is down to us as players, not any individuals, because, you know, this is a team sport and we're 11 men today, 10 men for most of the game. But we need to make sure that we're working for each other more so than anything. And at the moment, you know, for whatever reason, it's not clicking. But I don't put any blame on the manager. I think he sets us up in a way that is capable of winning the game. And, you know, he works very hard day to day and on a weekly basis to make sure we set up in the right manner. And like I said, it's up to us then to go and execute that. You know, I've got a lot of affection for this club. You know, it's given me a lot. You know, Norwich is my home. My family are growing up there, and it's a wonderful place to live. And, you know, this is probably the biggest blip we've had in the 7 years I've been here. But like I said, it's about rolling sleeves up, making sure that we're working together, we're trying to rectify the mistakes, and we're working as a team, and we're going out and ultimately picking up the results that we know we can get.
Welcome back to the Pinken.com podcast. Before we get back to the discussion, think you're the best at fantasy football? Dave, he's raising his eyebrows. Do not wait until the end of the season to find out. Put your fantasy football knowledge to the test, people, and win cash every week at DraftKings.co.uk. Apparently, DraftKings is the world's number one destination for one-day fantasy football for cash. Now, you can go to DraftKings.co.uk/pink now to pick a team and enter this Saturday's contest for a shot at winning a share of $200. Which I would imagine is probably worth more in terms of pounds now than when whoever wrote this down wrote it down. So get in there. That is the address, draftkings.co.uk/pink, to play free. And you may well do better than Norwich City and Alec Neil. John Reddy then, talking there. He was one of the big changes, wasn't he? John Reddy back in the team. We had Stephen Naismith. We had Sebastian Bassong. We already mentioned Dave Nelson Oliveira starting as well. Lots of changes, Pad. I mean, was it as random as it looked, did you feel?
Well, I mean, the reality is, if you want to actually dissect the game, then it's tough to berate him too much, because 40 seconds in, they're down to 10 men. So whatever else is going on in the context of this run and the major issues that aren't being addressed, you know, it's hard to sort of say, well, he's got that 11 wrong, because they've played effectively a game against 11v10, haven't they? So, and you saw immediately in the aftermath, Brady gets switched back to left back. Naismith came out to more of a wider to make a four across midfield. Oliveira's basically on you go, Nelson run around against sort of 5/6 players. So, you know, it's very hard if you boil it down to the actual what went on in the game after the Olsen incident to, you know, read too much into that, really. Did we learn too much about Nelson Oliveira in that game? No. We certainly didn't learn any thing we didn't know about Seb Bassong as a defender, that's for sure.
Bassong in particular, I mean, for me, Bassong should have been gone in the summer. I mean, it's easy for us all to say once again, for the second year in a row, that they had to sign a new centre-back. But to be bringing Bassong back in, I think Newcastle was his last chance. He failed and shouldn't be playing for Norwich anymore. It's not that Seb's an especially bad player or bloke, but he needs a fresh start as much himself. And it's just, as soon as he plays, everybody holds their breath, because as soon as he gets the ball, it's just like, what's going to happen? In the air, when he's dominant in the air, he's superb at this level and he's strong, but he just isn't switched on enough. And particularly when it's him next to Bennett, that ahead of a game, I just think, well, I don't feel confident about that.
This is bizarre, isn't it? Because he was doing it at this level under Alec Neil in those 6 months when Alec Neil was first in charge. So where's the big difference now? And I guess the issue with someone like Seb, and this, you can run this through a lot of players who are, you know, 29, 30, 31, 32. If no one comes in for them, what do you do? Because you can't just pay off their contracts. It would cost a fortune. And a lot of these players are on quite a lot of wages, which I think is probably an issue with what happened in January, in the summer too. And making that many changes, Pat, I mean, obviously a lot of people had asked for changes in the week or two before, and then they didn't get them, and then he gets a bit of criticism for making so many changes. But is that kind of last throw of the dice territory? Because what does he do now? That's the big question, isn't it?
Well, now we took changes, but he's still wedded to this 4-2-3-1, which clearly isn't working, you know. So if he's going to make a change, start right there, because Tetti and Dorans, they haven't won a midfield in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and it's no consequence that Norwich are on this shocking run, because if you're basically conceding the midfield territory, then you're going to be very hard pressed to win anything at any level of football, and that mix isn't working. So, you know, you might have made 6 changes, but one of them wasn't Dorans. So to my mind, that's an issue. Tete, I don't know what's happened to that lad. He's gone completely downhill in this run. He doesn't do a great deal with the ball, but without the ball. But then again, he's covering so much acreage, probably because he's got Dorans alongside him, and that's not his game. So the balance of the team's all wrong. And then you can talk about which pieces fit in which spaces. But if you're fundamentally set up wrong, then and we can talk all day long about central defence and defence generally, but they're not getting any protection, are they, from the men in front? So, as I say, it's not one thing, and you can say alter that and everything will be hunky-dory. It's a malaise, and that's the manager's fault, because he's allowed it to get to this stage, whether it's through stubbornness or whatever, not willing to take advice from whoever, and unfortunately he's going to pay the price.
Rather abysmal defending for the throw that led to the sending off and penalty, which was missed by Terjan Sherry. That's probably how you say it. That's how you say it in Norfolk. There was equally shocking defending for the corner that led to the first goal that Connor Washington scored, who I was reasonably impressed with, Connor Washington. And the second goal that came for half-time was neatly worked. It was a lovely through ball. Ian Holloway was raving about that through ball, wasn't it? It was like the best through ball he'd ever seen, because he's Ian Holloway, and that was the best football he'd ever seen.
Here's a kind of witty analogy about it, you know, being like being on a night out and seeing a hot blonde girl at the bar or something like that, in his witty way.
I think trousers and tailoring came up in pre-match, but was anything post-match, Pad?
Wasn't listening, mate.
There's my man. And then we had the second half reaction, of course, and Jacob Murphy hit the bar with a wonderful effort and then teed up Stephen Naismith for his consolation header. Norwich threw a little bit at the situation, but nothing really stuck by the end of it. So what does that say, Paddy? What does it say that Norwich did start playing with 20 minutes to go? Are we thinking, well, QPR got nervous?
Well, it shows how far Norwich have declined. That QPR, okay, they had the new manager in, but again, in that period, it was them who were retreating deeper and deeper. You know, they were the team, clearly they were, because they had to make a managerial change, that they've been on a shocking run themselves, and you could see that lack of confidence and belief. Just, I don't know, it was bizarre. Just look midway through the second half, whether they just could see the finishing line in sight, and it was have what we hold kind of thing. They hadn't managed to get the third goal, which probably would have effectively sealed it, which is only, for my mind, pure frustration, because Norwich, with 11 on the pitch playing anything like they can play, would have won that game. And again, it's just self-inflicted all the time, whether it's a guy who wants to try and play rugby with the football on a pitch, on the goal line, or lads can't defend, basic defending. You know, ultimately, if he pays the price, he's got no one to blame but himself, because this, where we are now in this rut, entirely avoidable. You know, even with the issues about recruitment, and maybe they needed to get another centre back in the summer, what they didn't do perhaps at the top end of the pitch, even with all those issues, it's entirely of their own making that they're in this hole, basically. And that's why it's hard to have any sympathy for either the manager or that set of players, because you know, it's entirely of their own making. It's not that they're getting put away by top quality sides in the Championship. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head now, probably Newcastle are the only team where you've thought they're a better side than Norwich in this division. All the other teams have played this season, Norwich had more than enough, even with injuries to key players, to get something out of those games. So, you know, ultimately, that's probably why we're at this stage now where the only way it's seemingly out is to make a managerial change.
I was thinking about this before Saturday, that the teams that Norwich have come up against who have been really at it, that Norwich have then been able to cope with. And none of the opposition, I mean, like you say, it comes down to the opposition's ability as well, but just the way they've gone about it. Possibly Bristol City is the only team where, you know, Norwich have had a real test and come out of it the other side, you know, in that sort of equal kind of way. Some QPR fans think they might make the top six.
QPR
fans, yeah.
Behave.
No, I can't see that either. They don't look like they've got the squad capable of that, to be honest. Fulham would seem a better bet for that than me, and I don't think they'll get to the playoffs either.
Quite agree. We're not going to have much of a conversation about that. Which takes us on to Derby then this weekend, assuming Alec is still in charge. As I said, we're now half three on Monday afternoon. And Derby are flying at the moment, aren't they? They've got Bradley Johnson, who we had a chat about. There's a man who's going to want to stick the knife in, isn't there? Not that, you know, anything, there was any major falling out, but from a player who was talking about making Norwich's home and joking about all that sort of stuff and how happy he was here, he'd signed a new contract like 3 months earlier to be shelled out straight away, pretty much.
It didn't seem like he wanted to leave, did he? And you can guarantee that the Norwich fans will give him one heck of a reception on Saturday.
There's no way he wanted to leave. No way.
No way. And there seems no need for him to leave. For most Norwich fans, I think there seemed like no reason for him to leave, other than the fact that he was perhaps too big a character for Alex Neil in the dressing room. You know, you know what you're going to get from Johnson on Saturday. Norwich are awful in the air. Bradley Johnson will go up for every single header, whether it's in midfield, defence or attack, and he'll probably win most of them against the current Norwich players. He hasn't really been banging them in the way that he did in Norwich's promotion season, so, you know, along come Norwich, here comes his first 30-yarder of the season, you would imagine. But that is exactly the sort of character that Norwich are lacking. If you had Bradley Johnson where Graham Dorans is at the moment, alongside Alex Tetti, it'd be a completely different deal, because he was similar to Grant Holt in the way that when Norwich were in a rut in a game, they'd started badly, which, you know, has happened many times over the years under Alex Neil, Neil Adams, Chris Hughton. Bradley Johnson would be there and he would slam into a challenge and that would get the crowd going. I mean, Carrow Road has been like a library for the majority of this season, because everyone turns up expecting them to win 3 or 4 nil comfortably, and the players don't even look like they're putting in half the effort that's necessary just to be on a level pegging with the team who are out there who haven't got as much quality. That is the bare minimum you want to see as fans. You just want to see them running through brick walls, which is what Bradley Johnson does. Derby on Saturday, Steve McLaren, good appointment at this level, good manager in the Championship. Maybe not in the Premier League. I think that'll be a very tough game, and one where you could almost understand Alex playing a 4-2-3-1. But for me, he has got to go on the front foot on Saturday. He has got to go all out attack. He's got one last chance, as things stand at the moment, to save himself, and he's got to attack Derby and go for the win, because that's what he needs. Not just for self-preservation, but if Norwich to turn this situation around and still be considered a promotion prospect, they've got to go and win it somewhere like Derby soon. Otherwise, it's just going to drift.
Well, if it's quite highly likely they'll be outside the top six if they lose on.
They could be 10th or something, couldn't they?
It's incredible. I mean, Villa are 16th and they're 5 points off Norwich at the moment, so that's not a lot of ground covering all those teams. Great move for Bradley Johnson, Steve McLaren being reappointed, because, Johnson didn't really play a lot. I got the impression last season he was quite in and out. He's having a proper run of it now. And I just couldn't help thinking back to Friday as well, when Alec was talking about how modern day players are a bit soft. There's something that's not quite there compared to sort of 10, 15 years ago, as a general comment on footballers. And the fact they always used to call Bradley Johnson a man's man. He was a man's man, Paddy. We can't rewrite history. I think I can see why he sold Bradley Johnson in the same way that you can see why he sold Gary Hooper and other things like that at the time. The problem is they clearly tried to walk before they could run. They didn't get things sorted so they could push on. And now they've regressed back to the situation where they could really do with these guys. And so did he need to get rid of him in that instance? It's a hard one because you're trying to do too much too soon, maybe.
Imagine that, Johnson, Graben, Hooper in this squad. That would make a big difference, wouldn't it?
Where would they have been for the season? Which I guess that was Alec Neil's issue, wasn't it? If Bradley Johnson not playing as much in a Premier League side that he wanted to move the ball around quickly, but then actually didn't.
No, yeah. I mean, that's absolutely spot on. That at the moment that he deposited him off to Derby. Derby are in the Championship, Norwich are in the Premier League and looking to kick on, and we all know because we've seen him in the Premier League he probably isn't good enough for the Premier League. So that set of circumstances with excellent money for a guy they got for a free transfer, it made sense. It doesn't make sense now with the benefit of what's happened in the intervening period in terms of they didn't kick on, they've come back at a level and they've got effectively a set of players who aren't suited to Championship football or what a brand of football to get you success in the Championship. That's the top and bottom of it. Whereas Bradley Johnson in that mix, perfect. But, you know, obviously, if Alex Neil had known that down the line he was going to be back in the Championship, I don't think he would have sold Bradley Johnson. But you can't, I don't really blame him for selling him at that point, at that juncture. The failure there was then who they subsequently tried to bring in, or who they did bring in, who wasn't good enough, i.e. a certain man from Merseyside.
And what I would just put a caveat with that, the issue I did have when they sold Bradley Johnson was what bigger dent that would make in the dressing room in terms of character. And I do think that that's borne out to be true, because I don't think they had enough character in the dressing room last season. They definitely haven't got enough character in the dressing room now. So that was never replaced, and that's an issue that if Alec Neil couldn't deal with the fact that he wanted Bradley Johnson around about the place but not playing, because it would be an issue. Player of the season, one season, not them figuring. That's a shame that he felt he couldn't address that situation in a way.
Well, it's interesting the point that you made just before about what Alex was saying at the press conference on Friday, and that modern players are a bit soft and they're not necessarily men's men. They need to be sort of looked after a little bit. I mean, that's letting his true feelings seep out about the players, really, isn't it? And if you're Paul Lambert, for instance, he stood by his players whatever had happened. If they lost a game, he was still with his players. He was very much in that group. They were his lads. Alex seems to put up a little bit of a wall between him and the squad, and he does. When he does that, I'm not necessarily convinced by what he says. I'm not sure that he's got great faith in the players. I'm not sure the players got great faith in him, and it's just become all too unbalanced. If he can manage to correct that, because I suppose from at this point that we're sitting here, we've got to look at it is how does Alex Neil turn it around, which seems very, very difficult. If he can do it, if he can go and win at Derby, if he can see this out, get to January, make some changes, that potential for a sort of long-term spell is still there, just about, because he would then have earned the fans' respect, I think, and the players that remain, he would have earned their respect. But that's going to be very, very difficult.
It's going to be very, very difficult. It's been an epic podcast, so we need to wrap it up. So, Derby then, who thinks it's going to be anything other than a defeat? Let's get that out first. Paddy, you're already shaking your head.
Can't see it. Trying to think how he can change it. I mean, you'd expect Closer to come back in, but you need the Closer of the first couple of months of his Norwich reign, not the Closer who was going absolutely walkabout at Brighton. So, no. I do not see a radical change from what we've seen in the last four games to what they'll need to get a result at Derby, sadly.
Derby are absolutely flying. I don't think they've conceded a goal at home yet under Steve McLaren. Do they need Closer or Closure, DFA? Anyway, go on.
Well, I predicted QPR would win 2-1 on Saturday, so I...
All right. Throw off.
I hate to say it, but I can't see anything other than a fairly convincing Derby win at the moment. I really hope I'm wrong. But I think it will be a convincing win for Derby. And if that were to happen, I think a change has to happen, because you would then want that bounce ahead of the Brentford game. The new manager bounce, you'd want Carrow Road to be a happy place, an optimistic place for when Brentford arrive.
If they end up losing at Derby and we end up going into a game against Brentford at Carrow Road with Alec Neil still in post, then certain owners haven't learned anything from 10 years ago, as far as I see it. But there we go. Well, we'll see. I predicted 2-0 for Saturday, so obviously I was cursing Stephen Naismith in a nice way. Right, thanks, gents. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I appreciate that was an epic one, but, you know, we're in weird times. Epic times, indeed. DF, Pad, thank you so much. Thanks, everyone. And we'll be back the other side of the iPro. Let's see what we've got in store from here. Unless anything happens in the week, of course. Keep an eye out, pinken.com, for all the news. Until then, bye.